Welcome to Heart of Iowa on KHOI Community Radio, a patchwork quilt of artists, public speakers, and individuals of note in Central Iowa. Today's show features a talk given in Ames Council Chambers back in November by Eric Burmeister, the Executive Director of the Pope County Housing Trust Fund, an organization that receives state as well as local dollars to address the need for affordable housing. He was invited to speak in Ames because Story County has no local housing trust fund and so misses out on state dollars. The talk was sponsored by the Affordable Housing Advocacy Subgroup of AMOS, a mid-Iowa organizing strategy, and was well attended by Ames city staff, elected officials, affordable housing advocates, representatives of nonprofits and the Chamber of Commerce, and members of the public. KHOI was the only news outlet on hand. And now, Eric Burmeister.
The Polk County Housing Trust Fund was formed in 1995, and it was formed as an organization to address affordable housing needs in Polk County, and its initial funding was from the federal government. There are a lot of local housing trust funds around the country, and you can find local housing trust funds established in many different ways. But this one was established in order to take advantage of a one-time federal grant that Senator Harkin had put together. In the late 90s, the state of Iowa became involved in funding affordable housing programs around the state, and they delegated that responsibility to the Iowa Finance Authority. And the Iowa Finance Authority at that time then decided that they were going to use this local housing trust fund idea as a way to distribute that state money. The state also put together IFA put together a series of regulations that governed how local housing trust funds were to be established and how they were to be governed. That information is all in the Iowa Code and the Iowa Administrative Code and can be found on IFA's website. So if you go to the Iowa Finance Authority's website and go under State Housing Trust Fund, sometimes called the SHTF, you will find all kinds of information on how to establish a local housing trust fund, and how that organization must be governed. Story County is one of the few counties in the state that is not in some way associated with a local housing trust fund. Most of the rural counties are associated through their council of governments and are a multi-county trust fund. It has become difficult, frankly, in my mind, and so to talk about establishing single county trust funds anymore. One of the things that you'll need to do when you get down to the nitty gritty of putting one together is to meet with the representatives from IFA. Terry Rozonke is the individual at IFA that manages the Local Housing Trust Fund program. And also, I'm sure many of you are familiar with Dave Jamieson. He used to be, your treasurer was it your treasurer in Story County?
Yes.
Yeah. And so he's the head of IFA. Those are the folks that will give you direct advice in terms of how to go about setting one up. For the first, say, 6 or 7 years of the State Housing Trust Fund's program's existence, it was a discretionary line item in the state budget. So every year the legislature had to decide how much money it was going to allocate to affordable housing in Iowa. And so the State Housing Trust Fund allocation was not a terribly dependable source of funding. Sometimes the legislature would appropriate a little money. Sometimes it would appropriate a little more money. Sometimes it wouldn't appropriate anything. And so the program really suffered until about 6 or 7 years ago, when a couple of the legislators at that time got together and decided that if Iowa was going to be serious about providing affordable housing in this state, that it needed a consistent funding stream. And so it was decided that there was a standing appropriation of a maximum of $6 million that would be sent to IFA under the State Housing Trust Fund program, and that IFA then was to allocate that $6 million amongst the local housing trust funds on a per capita basis, which is what happens now. It's a little more complicated than that, but suffice it to say that the state right now has about $6 million that it can allocate amongst the local housing trust funds based upon population that they serve. I don't know what Story County's allocation would be. It'd be pretty easy to figure out. You could call Terry Rizonke and, as I say, find out how much state money you guys are leaving on the table. Because every day that you don't access that state money, it goes pro rata to the rest of us. Now, I'm here to tell you that I like Story County's money, but I will also tell you that you, you are leaving state money on the table every day that you go without a local housing trust fund. Now, the state money is not free. The fact is that a local housing trust fund must match the state dollars. It must match 25 cents of every state dollar it receives. So you have to have a local funding source that provides dollars to match the State Housing Trust Fund money. Not dollar for dollar, but 25%. Different housing trust funds around the state have different ways of receiving that money. Some of them receive it from local government. Some of them go out in the community and raise private dollars. Some of them receive a portion of gambling proceeds if, in fact, there's some sort of a gambling facility within their region. Polk County is extremely fortunate in the fact that for the last 20 years, the Polk County Board of Supervisors has determined that affordable housing in Polk County is a need and every year allocates the Polk County Housing Trust Fund $1.5 million. That $1.5 million easily matches the $600,000 or so that we receive every year from the State Housing Trust Fund. So, you know, that's sort of your first financial hurdle, is to find out and decide where your match is going to come from. And obviously the match that, if it's more than the minimum, and Polk County certainly is, if it's more than the minimum, then that's the more you can do as a local housing trust fund. Let me talk a little bit about governance, and then I'll talk a little bit about what you can do with the, you know, what we do with the dollars, and talk a little bit about what you could do with the dollars. So governance, one of the things that's required in order to access the state housing trust fund dollars besides the match is that you have to have and be governed by an independent board. So the fact is that the Polk County Board of Supervisors cannot be the governing board for the Polk County Housing Trust Fund. The Des Moines City Council cannot be the governing board for the Polk County Housing Trust Fund. The rules and regulations that govern state housing trust funds and local housing trust funds prohibit the board from being made up of more than 50% elected officials. So you must have 50% plus one local folks on the board making decisions on how to spend the money. IFA recommends that the community volunteers be made up of folks with lived experience, that is, folks who live in or need affordable housing, be made up of builders, developers, realtors, lawyers, accountants, folks that somehow bring different skill sets to the idea of affordable housing. Our board happens to be made up of many more local community folks than elected officials. We actually have only three elected officials on our board right now of 16. So it is a community-based allocation. Again, those are all rules that are written down and fairly simple, but recognize what it means is, frankly, when the rubber meets the road, is that whomever you get your match from is not going to have control over the money that they give to the local housing trust fund. Once that money is given as a match, that money is allocated by the local housing trust fund board. And it is the board that makes the decision on how the money is allocated. So what can you allocate the money for? It's pretty broad. Our 28E agreement with the county allows us to allocate money to projects that create and preserve affordable housing and for services that assist people that live in affordable housing. It also allows us to pay our overhead. The Polk County Housing Trust Fund does three things. We do research and planning around affordable housing. We know who in Polk County and in the region needs affordable housing. What do those households look like? Are they singles? Are they families? How many kids? We also know what the inventory of affordable housing is in Polk County. Our goal, obviously, then with our funding is to match the need with the available inventory. Not always easy, and not something that we're even close to having accomplished, but that's the goal, is to make sure that the need matches the inventory. We also are the advocacy group for affordable housing. We know that affordable housing is not the most popular cause in central Iowa. In fact, there's always a lot of work to do when developers try and find sites for affordable housing. And so we are the organization that's responsible for making sure that the community understands the benefits of affordable housing. So those three things, you know, education and planning, advocacy, and funding are the three things that we do. And the funding is based every year on what we call a housing allocation plan that a committee of the board puts together, and the board votes on and approves, that fill certain silos. That is, new rental housing, owner-occupied repair, that is, preservation of and help for homeowners that make below, in our case, depending upon the year, 50% of area median income, to help with things like new roofs, new water lines, making a home handicapped accessible, those sorts of things which preserve affordable housing and keep people in their homes. Also, we have an allocation for repair and maintenance of existing multifamily affordable housing. and we have, you know, special categories that we use to fill in some gaps. So we have some technical assistance funds for developers that can be used in order to do some initial discovery work or appraisals and things that would determine whether or not a particular project would be viable. In any given year, we allocate between $2 and $2.5 million of funds for affordable housing across those things that are in our housing allocation plan. We keep track of the number of units that we preserve or create. We keep track of the population that live in those units. And sometimes, depending upon what we're funding, we may in fact get back from the developer, either in interest or return on principal, you know, part of the money that we allocate, which is why over time our allocations get larger, because while we don't get 100% of the money that we allocate returned, over time you begin to structure, or the trust fund should begin to structure, its loans or its grants to be self-sustaining. Or at least certainly our goal is to have our overhead be self-sustaining. And if you go to our website, you can actually see we impacted roughly 400 units last year in some way, shape, or form. Because we also require matches from our developers. We don't go out and say to a provider, here's $100,000. We go out and say to a provider, here's $100,000. You go out and find another $100,000 from some other source to match it. So our leverage rate runs anywhere, depending on the project, runs anywhere from 1 to 1 to 1 to 10. And I'll just give you a good example. We fund Greater Des Moines Habitat for Humanity, and they produce 27 houses, but that leverage match is almost 1 to 5. So we'll only fund roughly a fifth of the cost of a house. They're left to find funding for the other four-fifths. We also, it's not required of a local housing trust fund, but we've done it since the beginning, is we also run a charitable campaign in the community for housing services. So the money that we get from Polk County and the money that we get from the state, we use almost exclusively for what we call bricks and mortar work, for either producing or preserving units of affordable housing. We also raise anywhere from $300,000 to $500,000 a year in the business community in Des Moines to fund programs that provide services for families and households that live in affordable housing. Most of those programs serve households that make less than 30% of area median income. So basically households that are what we tend to call service level employees, households that are making $10 an hour or less. So we fund programs for that. So that's sort of the other side of the house. It's not required of a local housing trust fund, but like I say, we've done it from our inception. And so that helps make sure that programs are funded. For instance, I don't know what Story County United Way's position is. Central Iowa United Way generally does not fund housing programs. They look to the Polk County Housing Trust Fund to do that. So it kind of depends on how your philanthropic community, you know, tends to work together. So there are a lot of things to do. There are some hurdles to jump through at IFA, not only in terms of the actual setup of the Local Housing Trust Fund, but the fact is right now IFA is encouraging regional housing trust funds, and so they may want you to, Boone doesn't have a local housing trust fund, Boone County. Actually, it's really interesting, the majority of the counties that don't have local housing trust funds are right around central Iowa, and the reason is that central Iowa does not have a COG. And so Boone, Story, Mahaska, Warren, Jasper do not have local housing trust funds. We've tried to talk to some of the folks at Warren County and Mahaska County and Jasper County about trying to get together to see if they can't come together and pull together a local housing trust fund. The problem is that there needs to be some driver right from the get-go to get it done. And that's the advantage you guys have, is you can be the driver to say, we're going to figure out how to get this done, and we haven't been able to find that in some of the other counties, because they can't join with Polk for a number of reasons, some complicated mathematically and some political. We could and have offered to some other counties to provide back office service, you know, in the beginning, if they wanted to try and put together a local housing trust fund just on a fee-for-service basis. But the ability to actually join the Polk County Housing Trust Fund, at least under current IFA rules, would not be permitted. Or at least put it this way, my board would not permit it, because there is a cap on the amount of money that a single local housing trust fund can receive, and we are at it. So if we pulled another county into the Polk County Housing Trust Fund, we would not receive that new county's per capita state housing trust fund allocation, because we are currently at the limit. So I'm going to shut up now and let people ask questions, and I'll try to answer them. Remember that I am not IFA. So if you really want the final answer, that has to come from the Iowa Finance Authority.
You're listening to Heart of Iowa on KHOY Community Radio 89.1 FM. The speaker is Eric Burmeister of the Polk County Housing Trust Fund. He was invited to Ames to discuss the nuts and bolts of creating a local housing trust fund.
Amy, Erica Smith from Ames. You said that the reason we don't have a housing trust fund in many of these counties in central Iowa is because we don't have a COD. What's a COD?
COG, Council of Government.
Oh, okay.
And it's a local planning group. The state set them up. You can go to the code and find out who's in a COG, and for some reason the central Iowa counties are not put into this Council of Government format. The Polk County Housing Trust Fund, and there are some other local city trust funds and county trust funds, existed before the state sanctioned them. So, I mean, we existed before the state sanctioned local housing trust funds. And so we're, I guess, grandfathered in.
My question, and I'm Diane Burt, and my question is, you know, have you closed the gap? Mm-hmm. You talked about inventory versus need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, and so in Polk County, and this deals with folks and households that make less than 30% of area median income. So these are households that are making between minimum wage and about $10, $11 an hour. So we know that there are 13,784 of those households in Polk County. We also know that there are only 6,224 units available in Polk County that are affordable for those households. So we've got, you know, roughly a 7,000 unit gap. Now, that doesn't mean that those 7,000 people are homeless. What it means is that they are living in apartments that where they pay more than 30% of their income for rent. So they're what we call rent burden. Some of them are paying up to 60 and 70% of their total income for housing. And so, yes, we do try and close that. Those units are the most expensive units to develop, as you can imagine. And so what we have done is we have a bounty that we pay to developers for those units. This year it costs $62,500 to keep a unit, a new unit, affordable for 30% or less for 30 years. So if a developer comes in to us and says, I'm building a you know, a 40-unit apartment complex, and I would like to have three units be affordable. I will pledge that three units will be affordable for folks that make 30% or less of area median income, and I will pledge that for 30 years, we will pay them a bounty, which is basically putting our equity into the property. We will pay them a bounty of $62,500. So last year, 14 units. We did other things, but in terms of new unit construction, we bought 14 new units. This year, we're on target to buy 20.
And I'm assuming your need is growing, too.
Oh, yeah. And of course, that's one of the things that is different, I think, between Ames and Des Moines. I think your situation is much more fluid than ours is because of your student population. That tends to vary much more widely year to year than Polk County's, you know, population.
Regarding this bounty that you just talked, how do you follow up? 30 years is a long time to...
That's right.
They're keeping their promise.
That's right. And there are a couple of ways to do that. In many of our projects, in fact, most of our projects, they are done in conjunction with the low-income housing tax credit. So there is a federal, there is a federally mandated reporting system for that. We do some smaller projects, and yes, there's going to have to be someone who outlives me to monitor those every year. But we do it by requiring rent rolls. And basically the same kinds of reporting that IFA requires on its low-income housing tax credit projects.
I'm Sherry Riley. Have you ever had anybody double up on those kinds of things? Like double up getting money from more than one agency to one apartment?
Yes, especially in the low-income housing tax credit area, because the low-income housing tax credits, you don't have to provide units that are at that 30% or less. You can go up to 80%. Most of the low-income housing tax credit developments run right around 50 to 60% of area median income. And we know that there are a lot of folks in Polk County that cannot afford that. So we use our funds basically to buy down affordability on a certain number of those units. That's really what we call, stacking funds.
Do you interact with the Section 8 housing program?
To the extent that when we're doing our inventory work, we count those vouchers as units of affordable housing. So when we determine what the need is, we interact that way. We also, from a policy standpoint, have opinions, I guess, on what are called preferences for housing choice vouchers. So do you guys have that anymore up here? Did somebody tell me that Ames gave up its housing choice vouchers or got out of the business or something? And was I dreaming that?
Well, SRHI's waiting list is anywhere from 6 months to a year.
Okay.
Like I said, they have six counties. For Ames, we have about 200 vouchers. That's still in Ames. When we had the program, we had our contract with HUD was for 229.
Okay.
So it wasn't enough units to keep up with all the massive changes that HUD was making in the administration. So that's why we succeeded
Yeah, and that's what, and Polk County has now merged with Red Rock.
Exactly.
So is your waiting list on a first come, first serve basis, do you know?
SRHI has a preference for elderly and disabled first, and then I believe families with children.
So when you're allocating housing choice vouchers, different jurisdictions do it differently. They have, some of them are first come, first serve. Some of them have preferences. We definitely have opinions on preferences. The Polk County Housing Trust Fund does. And so we push very hard for our housing choice voucher system to provide preferences for the homeless population, for instance. So if someone is homeless, we do have preferences in our system that allow the program to go out and give those folks preference for housing vouchers. We also have a preference for families with children. Again, lots of rules and regulations from HUD on how you can do that, but it is a big part of the entire housing system in your community. So we don't have control over those, but we do have opinions on how they're managed.
There are national groups now active in empowering and building, especially low-income housing and housing for the homeless, such as Common Ground and so on. Mm-hmm. Have you recruited these into Central Iowa, or have you been able to work with them? Or?
We are not the homeless. There is, in fact, it's called the Continuum of Care Board in Polk County that handles the homeless system, I guess, in Polk County. We are a part of that, but the executive director of that group, Mark Phillips, who just started actually, is taking a look at some of those national models for providing homeless, permanent supportive housing and permanent housing for homeless folks. We only fund permanent housing. So the Polk County Housing Trust Fund does not fund shelters. We don't fund transitional housing. We only fund permanent housing, both permanent housing and permanent supportive housing. Permanent supportive housing is defined as housing and services together. So most of the folks that you find that need permanent supportive housing are folks with mental or physical disabilities, folks who may have some sort of a chronic issue. It's housing and services together, but it is permanent housing. It's not a program. Transitional housing sometimes is more described as a program. You know, you come in, you stay for 24 months, you get your problem figured out, and then you're on your own. Permanent supportive housing is just that. It's permanent.
Ken Siebert, and I was wondering, do you give any priority to those who are near homelessness? In other words, they can't pay the rent this month and they're being threatened with being evicted.
Yeah. Again, that's not managed through our organization. That's managed through the Continuum of Care Board. But yes, we don't fund them, but there are programs that are diversionary in nature. If someone is short money on rent, there are resources available in the community to help with that.
What if they don't get it? Do you make them move out?
Well, see, we don't manage properties. We fund. So those sorts of things are up to the individual landlords that actually own and manage the properties. So we can tell a landlord or a developer what they can charge for an apartment, but their interaction with their own tenants is subject to their rules and subject to the Iowa Landlord-Tenant Act. So or if the trust fund funds a unit and that tenant does not pay rent or that tenant can't pay rent, we have no leverage to go to the landlord and say, you have to keep those folks.
Dorian Venture, I'm wondering if you know whether any of the municipalities in Polk County are currently mandating inclusionary zoning or
no.
Have tried it in the past?
No. No and no.
That was an easy answer.
That was an easy answer, yeah. No, if you go back, I think Jan mentioned that one of our latest pieces of work is something called Housing Tomorrow. It is a regional plan for affordable housing for Central Iowa from now till 2050. And we don't necessarily call out inclusionary zoning by name, but in that plan there are plenty of strategies around making sure that there is good affordable housing throughout our community, not just in the central part of Des Moines, not just in old buildings, but that providing affordable housing be included in economic development discussions. We sort of force our way into those circles and into those discussions. When folks and cities are talking about their economic development strategy, we're right there telling them, because it's pretty easy to calculate, how many jobs are going to be created by that particular piece of development that are not, folks will not be able to pay the average cost of a two-bedroom apartment. I mean, that's part of the advocacy work that we do, making sure that communities understand that when they create a Jordan Creek, that there are going to need to be a lot of folks that are employed there that are going to need affordable housing. You guys, I say you do, but certainly Iowa State has all of the bells and whistles to put all of that together. We use GIS mapping to show where low-wage job centers are versus where affordable housing is located. We use transportation calculators to determine what it costs folks to get from certain parts of the region to those low-wage job centers. There's just an abundance of material that the community planning department over at the College of Design has to do all of that. I mean, you make some really, really interesting maps that show where people work and where they live. First of all, I tell people, I'm going to retire when the first major business comes into Central Iowa and says, we want to build a gazillion-dollar home office here, but we have a certain number of our employees that make less than $35,000 a year, and we want to know where they're going to live within 2 miles of where we're going to build. That's success in my book, because the fact is that that's what's going to create an urgency on the part of local government to take a look at their zoning ordinances, to take a look at their community character plans, to take a look at all of the things that they do either consciously or unconsciously to zone out affordable housing, because taxable assessed valuation is the pole star of what local governments want. And so when you can manage to marry the two, that is the organizations or the folks that create taxable assessed valuation and have an interest in making sure that their workforce has affordable housing, that's when you really, really start to make progress on that gap. And that's proven over and over in larger metropolitan areas where businesses do that and say, listen, our geographic footprint is so big that if you want us to build whatever it is, our home office building or our new retail center or whatever it is, then we need to make sure that there are places within a reasonable distance, some of them in urban areas, within walking distance, where our employees can afford to live. And that's when you start to really make progress.
So my name is Terry Potter. What do you find is the compelling argument for the real estate and development community in terms of driving affordable housing?
Well, I spent 30 years in the real estate development business, and so developers will build what is profitable and what sells or what rents. They also look very much for incentives to do it. So my developer clients really didn't care what it was that they built, so long as they made money and so long as they were able to find some incentives to help them do that. And so to me, having the development community understand the marketplace and understand the population is important. The second thing is anything that you can do to provide them incentives to do what it is, to build what it is that you want them to build, is a plus. But for the most part, people will build what is easiest. And right now, we had a two-day meeting with the city of Urbandale about a month and a half or so ago to talk about some of these issues. The fact is right now that most cities in and around Central Iowa are just platting, you know, 80-foot lot after 80-foot lot after 80-foot lot. And builders are buying them because that's what's available. It becomes up to the cities and the communities to start saying what do we want our community to look like and what is sustainable over time. And building $300,000 houses from a workforce standpoint is not sustainable over time. And sooner or later, growth and development is going to stop because there aren't enough people to work at the wages that are being offered. There just aren't many jobs being created out there that support a $350,000 or $400,000 house. There are some, but not a lot. There are a lot more jobs being created where reasonably affordable housing is going to be necessary. And that's an argument that, you know, that's an argument that's just ages old. I mean, folks take a look at what's working now, and if it ain't broke, don't fix it, as opposed to what's this going to look like in 2050.
This is Heart of Iowa on KHOI Community Radio. You're listening to the question and answer period of a talk given by Eric Burmeister, the Executive Director of the Polk County Housing Trust Fund, which addresses the need for affordable housing in Des Moines and surrounding areas.
Sherry Riley again. What aspect of some of these issues can be solved with the transportation solutions?
We work very closely with DART, which is our local public transportation service. And the fact is that when you start looking at combining transportation costs and housing costs together, and if we each do a little, we can make some really big progress. So, for instance, when someone comes in and applies to us for our money, we take a really close look at its access to public transportation. Our scoring system puts a lot of credence in access to public transportation. That being said, and not being totally familiar with your public transportation system here, which a lot of the really low-income service jobs don't occur between 8 and 5 during the day when the most robust public transportation runs in the city of Des Moines. And so we work really closely with DART. They need to be linked, but like I say, we don't have anywhere near the kind of public transportation we need for service workforce. And mainly because it doesn't run with enough frequency and doesn't run at appropriate hours for them. So what we do is we make a big deal about location to low-wage jobs. Is it bikeable? Is it walkable? Those sorts of things.
Amy Erica Smith again. So you framed this as being a situation where low-income housing in some circumstances is just not going to be profitable without some public subsidy, without some public investment. Mm-hmm. Surely there are policies mm-hmm. that can affect the profitability even absent public subsidies. What are the policy changes, particularly within this local area, that can be taken without investment of actual public money in particular units to change the profit margin on the development of affordable housing?
Well, a couple of things. There are all kinds of ways that different communities have sought to build affordable housing. One is inclusionary zoning. So it's not public money that's going in per se, not tax dollars going in per se, but the fact is that it is a subsidy on the part of the developer and therefore on the part of the folks that are in market rate housing that subsidize the affordable housing. So inclusionary zoning is one of them. There are others that are not so draconian. Smaller lot sizes, and this is mostly single family now, not multifamily. Smaller lot sizes. West Des Moines, for instance, has a community character plan that requires that currently that you be able to park two cars undercover. That is, you got to have a two-car garage, and you must have enough concrete, i.e. driveway, to park two additional cars off the street. It's because that's a community character that they want. They don't want cars on the street. And a lot of communities have minimum square footage requirements. says you can't build a house unless it's at least this big. There are a lot of communities that have a requirement for a certain amount of brick or stone on an exterior. We did a study on what different community character plans and zoning ordinances added to the cost of a house. And, you know, you're not talking about a couple of thousand dollars. You're talking about, you know, tens of thousands of dollars for the cost of a single family residence. The other thing is, and again, don't understand where Ames is on this, but for multifamily housing, there are limits on density per acre, number of people per acre. And obviously one of the ways to make housing affordable is to increase density. And if your community has limitations on density, that's going to drive up the cost of multifamily housing. Parking requirements are another one. So if you have, even if they do allow density, they still require two parking places per apartment, even though it's on a bus line, or even though it's within walking distance of downtown, or even if it's an efficiency apartment where only one person lives. Yeah, go ahead, sorry.
Jim Grant, I've often thought, some of the most affordable housing around here has been, and maybe some still is, trailer courts.
Mm-hmm.
And they're usually the first to go. Okay, they get built in floodplains, that's one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're built on land that's had been thought to be undesirable, now mm-hmm. it becomes desirable, mm-hmm. and out they go.
Mm-hmm.
Then the land is vacant for 3 or 4 years until they figure out what to do with it. But what about some either publicly owned or nonprofit owned, or with a 30-year commitment from developers, trailer courts.
Mm-hmm.
And don't put them in floodplains.
Yeah, don't put them in. Well, and you know, we're first of all, you've got to overcome the stigma that comes with that. But the fact is that there are plenty of opportunities. A old-time trailer court is nothing more than a bungalow court, which is what preceded it, really. And so it's a land use issue. So now you can't build a small neighborhood or community of small houses, whether stick built or pre-manufactured, that have the kind of setbacks or lack of setbacks that you had in the old trailer courts. Doesn't mean you can't change your laws to do that. And you can go to any number of, places around the country and find examples where someone, again, said, you know what, to heck with all of these density regulations. We're going to put up, they've done them with shipping containers, make them look kind of cool, actually. But we're going to put up a very dense neighborhood development where there are, shared green, not everybody has a 75 or 80 foot wide yard. There's a shared green space that people use for recreation. Those are the kinds of things, again, that you have to go through and figure out what it is in your city codes that prevent those kinds of things from happening. And all of that is changeable.
Sharon Slinger, most of the discussion is about urban affordable housing.
Mm-hmm.
And since we are from the outposts of Story County, I would like to know how one discovers the actual need in these small communities and rural communities.
Interesting question. Thank you. Yes, from your question on need, frankly, you're probably, from being there, you're probably as close to it as anybody in knowing what your need is. I will tell you that some of the most affordable housing, particularly affordable family housing, is currently in some of our small towns in and around population centers in central Iowa. Not close, but when you start talking about people driving, and I'll talk about central Iowa right now, you find people driving from Guthrie Center and Redfield and Dexter and Stewart and all of those places. There is a fair amount of family housing in those areas, but the question is that the transportation and the commute becomes unsustainable for folks. or it drives up the cost of the housing simply by having the commute. But there are resources through IFA, they do a pretty good job, of taking a look at affordable housing needs and affordable housing solutions for rural communities.
Bill Flinger, then how do you pull those small communities into what's going to be called a story count or story county? Mm-hmm. You know, how do you pull them in rather than serve from above?
Okay.
You
know? Well, part of it is remember that the funding decisions are made by, you know, by a board. Okay, so our board hasn't approved it yet, but our development committee has, and the developer knows it. We just approved a $250,000 allocation to a 40 or 50 unit affordable multifamily senior in Bondurant. So Bondurant is a rural area of Polk County, but we know that there is a need for particularly senior affordable housing in Bondurant. And so part of it is that we don't just fund in the city of Des Moines. Two of our projects that were, again, are on the board or going to the board in December for funding recommendation are in Ankeny. I understand that's sort of still considered to be Des Moines, but we don't just fund in the city of Des Moines. And you wouldn't in Story County either, I assume.
So. Yeah, I wanted to ask also about the concept of a boarding house. It seems like it's a thing of the past, but it used to be a way that people mm-hmm. Lived on very little income. They might not have their own shower. They would go down the hall to get a shower, go down the hall to the kitchen. Mm-hmm. Do regulations make that completely impossible?
Yes.
Okay, and you have none of those in your mix.
I think to the extent that we talk about all housing options, if someone came to us and said, "Yes, we've gotten permission from somebody to build," I call them single room occupancies, an SRO, would you fund that? We'd fund that in a minute. But right now, there are regulations, codes in. Every jurisdiction in Polk County that would prohibit that. And so, do we talk about that? Yes. Do we tell people that, yes, all kinds of housing is advantageous? If you go to Housing Tomorrow, you'll see all kinds of different styles of housing can be used. But, again, that's an issue for the cities.
Well, I want to thank the participants for tremendous questions, for the tremendous interest that you're showing, and I look forward to seeing things develop in Story County, and join me in thanking Eric for coming up and stimulating that.
Don't leave state money lay on the table.
And those were Eric Burmeister's last words to his audience in Ames Council Chambers back in November. Eric is the executive director of Polk County Housing Trust Fund, which receives some of the state money earmarked for local housing trust funds. Story and Boone counties are two of the few counties in Iowa that do not have a local housing trust fund. The Amos Affordable Housing Advocacy Group invited Eric to speak as part of its initial exploration into developing a local housing trust fund to address local need for affordable housing. This has been Heart of Iowa on KHOI Community Radio. I've been your host, Greta Anderson. I also taped and edited the show to fit our 55-minute format. This program and links to the websites the speaker referenced will appear on the main page of our website, khoifm.org, and will be permanently archived on our website under Heart of Iowa, thanks to our webmaster, Ron Carson. While you're on our website, please click the Donate button. We need your support to continue airing this unique content. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.